There are more than 1 billion people with hypertension, and only 1 in 5 actually have it under control. So that's 800 million people with uncontrolled hypertension. If you are one of those people, today's episode is for you. And if you don't know if you're one of those people, you should check your blood pressure today. So welcome to the Brain Podcast, where we translate medical science into practical actions you can start today. Science-driven, behavior-designed, built to protect your brain for the long term.
I am Dr. Shabnam Daskar. I'm a functional medicine doctor and a certified Tiny Habits coach. And I combine medicine with behavior science in helping you improve your focus, get rid of brain fog, and prevent dementia down the line.
And I'm Andrea Spiros. I'm a behavior design consultant, and I'm here to bridge the gap between knowing what's good for your brain and actually doing it, so that you leave every episode with something you can do, not just something you know. So today we're going to focus on 5 things that you can do to control your blood pressure right now. And we're going to basically describe what they are and why they're important to you, and then you can put them on the calendar. They're going to be easy, they're going to be practical, and they're going to be things that you can do once you're finished listening.
Yeah, so I'm going to start with sharing a slide, and this is particularly important because we have audio and video listeners. So Andrea, can you see my slide?
Exactly. Okay. And while you're getting that sorted, I will share so people can know what's coming up, that 5 things are to know your target guideline for your blood pressure, to have an accurate home device, and to learn how to measure, review the food in your house for sodium, and to talk to your physician about potassium substitutes. So let's start with the slide.
Okay, so as all of you can see, and for those who are listening to the audio only, this is the blood pressure category slide, which is from the American Heart Association. This came out last year. So you can see that a normal blood pressure is, now as all of you know, and Andrea, why are we talking about blood pressure on the Brain Podcast?
Right. That's a really good question. We do have some other episodes about the foundations of brain health, but why don't you share the 3 foundations of brain health and why blood pressure is important?
So Andrea and I talk on the Brain Podcast about the 3 foundations of brain health. Number 1 is optimal blood pressure levels. Number 2 is optimal blood glucose levels, even if you do not have diabetes. And number 3 is low levels of chronic inflammation. And we have detailed episodes on that. We'll have all those episodes on the show notes. But going back to what are the thresholds, what are the numbers you should aim for? Now, again, this is not medical advice, but you can see on the screen that a normal blood pressure is less than 120, that is the upper number, and less than 80, that is the lower number. So normally we say it as 120 by 80. And for women, studies are showing that probably we need a lower threshold, but that has not gone into the guidelines yet. So bottom line is, experts agree that the lower your blood pressure, the better it is. But then again, of course, there are a whole lot of caveats, because some people have serious health conditions. If you have multiple health challenges, you're on multiple medications. So number 1 thing is, you should know what is your optimal blood pressure target. So Andrea, we always focus on the practical stuff. So what would you suggest our audience should do in terms of, actual practical steps?
These practical steps today are what we call one-time actions, things you just have to do one time that set you up for success in the future. So if you have a trusted physician or other healthcare practitioner that you can go to, make an appointment today to go get your blood pressure checked. Oftentimes in various parts of the world, you can go to maybe a secondary provider. We might call them a drugstore or a pharmacy, and they will have someone there skilled, a skilled professional that can tell you for you what your target market is. You can also look at this slide and share, you know, look for yourself about where you should be. And then follow the guidelines. The habits you might have to put in place are going to be a little bit different, but we'll get to those in another episode.
Yes. So number one thing, as Andrea explained, you know, do you know what your optimal blood pressure should be? And if you don't know, talk to your healthcare provider, whether it's your family physician, your nurse practitioner, whoever it is you meet regularly. And if you don't meet anyone regularly, well, maybe that's a habit you need to create.
That's a great one-time action to find a healthcare practitioner that you trust, that you believe in, right? That is for you.
This is the other problem with hypertension, because many of us may have high blood pressure and not even know it. So that was the number one thing that we talked about. Now, what is the second thing, which is actually very important? And here we have a slide of, you know, showing home blood pressure monitoring. Now, all the hypertension guidelines nowadays suggest that measuring blood pressure at home or a 24-hour ambulatory blood pressure device, or there is a wearable device called Hilo. We'll have all these in the show notes. These are the better ways to check your blood pressure rather than a hurried single measure at the doctor's office. Now, on the slide, and again, you know, those of you who are listening to the audio version only, for them, I'm describing it. So how do you do? Number one is you have to get a good, validated, good quality device. And there is a website called stridebp.org, stridebp.org. You can go to that website, and that is an international website. In some countries have their own websites as well, where they have a list of all the clinically validated. So clinically validated meaning these have been checked for accuracy. Because when you're measuring something, you have to make sure that it's an accurate one. Just because a device is kind of cheap and it checks your blood pressure doesn't mean it is accurate. Now, the next thing that comes is, Andrea, what is the practical thing people can do based on, you know, what I said just now? Then we'll go to the process of measuring.
Exactly. And again, today is all one-time actions, things you can do one time. You can make a note on your calendar right now. You can click on the show notes, click on the link, press pause on the video, click on the link to stridebp.org and look at the home devices there and order one.
Yeah. The next thing is measuring blood pressure at home. Now, you can see on this chart that ideally, and this is what actually gets a lot of people, you know, wrong, because people measure blood pressure sometimes without. So the ideal way to do it is you sit on a chair with your back supported, both feet firmly on the ground, your forearm is supported on the table, and you have a blood pressure cuff size that is appropriate for you, because we have different body weights, you know. So people who are extremely thin or they are living with a higher body fat, an average size cuff may not be adequate. So first of all, it needs to cover at least 80% of your arm circumference. So getting the right cuff size. Then having both, and as you can see on this chart, like this is going to be on the show notes for those of you who are listening only, small things like talking when getting your blood pressure checked. So ideally, you are supposed to be left all alone at the doctor's office with an automated device. The nurse or the front office assistant is not supposed to chat with you about your last weekend and take your blood pressure at the same time. So not talking, not putting the cuff over your clothes, having an empty bladder, not drinking any caffeinated beverage at least 30 minutes before measuring. Then ideally you need to sit for at least 5 minutes and not look at your phone or anything, because you never know, you might get some news feed and like some piece of news. And have your back supported, all those things that I mentioned. And on this chart, you can see like one small little thing, you know, arm hanging freely by the side. And sometimes you won't believe, Andrea, even in doctors' clinics, I have seen it even in cardiologists' clinics, where the arm is like dangling in midair.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm short. So my feet were also dangling.
Oh my goodness.
I so wanted to tell that girl, you know, that this is not the right method. But I said, I better keep quiet. So yeah. And don't, just because it's a doctor's clinic or a cardiologist's clinic, don't assume that they know it right. A lot of people make that mistake. So here we're talking about measuring at home. So, and the other thing is, it's ideal to take an average of 3 measurements instead of just going by 1. Now, some of the devices actually wait for you to take 3 measurements and then they average it out. But if you have a device that doesn't do it automatically, take 3 measurements. And then the next thing is, Andrea, what would you suggest that people do about capturing the information? Like, I love digital stuff, you know?
Right, but not everybody likes digital things, and people, some people do better with
it. You'd be surprised, Andrea. I have patients who will say, I said, just write it down on a piece
of paper. Writing it down is so important. Here's the thing. So to break down what you just said, one of the most important action items is, first of all, if you know you have hypertension, then getting a device is going to be helpful for you. And you should take that one-time action. Go to that website. If you don't know that you have hypertension, then the first action of going to your physician and double checking is going to be right for you, right? We are not suggesting that everybody right now run out and get a blood pressure device when you might actually have perfectly normal blood pressure. If you do need the device and then you get an accurate one, then you do want to do another one-time action. So this is like bonus action of learning how to use it, right? The graphic will be in the show notes. Practice a few times. You might want to just have someone help you at first so you get it right and then you know you're doing it right to make sure you're right. That's called skilling up, right? Developing the skill of this. And that will make it easier for you in the future. A lot of times things are hard at first because they're new, not because there's actually so much challenge to them. And then once you make it easier, it'll be more, it'll be faster for you. So then you do want to set your environment up for success by having whatever you need to record the blood pressure right there with you. If you are analog, go ahead and put a notebook, have it gridded, however you like it, where you're putting the date and the, you know, systolic and the diastolic blood pressure on there, or one column, whatever you need. And if you're doing it multiple times a day, have that already gridded out. You know, you can just find, I'm sure you can find things online, or you can just make one for yourself, but however it is, it needs to work for you. If you like a digital format, go ahead and do it digitally, but have that set up wherever you're already to take your blood pressure so that it's make very easy for you to do. So that's what I would suggest for that. And once you do it, it'll make everything else easier because your environment will shift your actions.
Yeah, and we'll add a sample blood pressure record for, this will be a Google spreadsheet. So you feel free to download that and use it. Or the point is in recording it, it's not like what format. It has to be perfect and nicely decorated and pretty looking and all that. Because you have to share that information with your healthcare provider. So it should be in a format where it's easy for them to go over that, you know, the data, and you can have a much better conversation with your doctor or whoever's taking care of your blood pressure. So Andrea, we talked about, first was know what your optimal blood pressure should be. Number 2 is get a validated blood pressure device for home monitoring. And number 3 was knowing how to get an accurate blood pressure measurement. In fact, you won't believe, Andrea, sometime back there was they did a study where they got actually doctors to check blood pressure, and many of them would not pass, actually, if it was an exam. And I shared it with my classmates from med school. I said, how many of you would pass this test?
It's so interesting, right? Right. So we want to empower you, the listeners, to know what to do so that you can get an accurate measurement. Because there's nothing worse than having someone take your blood pressure wrong and then saying that you have hypertension when you actually don't. So we want to empower you to have the good conversations with your healthcare provider and that you get accurate medical advice and take accurate actions for yourself. So the next one is to review the food in your house for sodium. And maybe let's talk about what sodium does and why it's important to hypertension.
So I'm sure all of you have heard, you know, at some point or the other, the moment anyone talks about what is the best food for hypertension, the first thing they talk about is low sodium food. Now, the fact is, yes, eating high amount of sodium is not good for not just hypertension, for stomach cancer and a lot of other conditions. But it is also important to remember that not everybody has salt-sensitive hypertension. Now, Andrea and I will go over that on another episode. Otherwise, this episode is going to become really long. So what do you do as a person with... Now, here I'm assuming you know you have hypertension. So you're going to go over your food. First and foremost is, are you eating too much sodium? And the commonest way to know, because there is no simple blood test, which is testing your blood for sodium is not going to tell you whether you have salt sensitive hypertension. And salt, meaning table salt, is sodium chloride. So high sodium can raise blood pressure. And some of my patients, Andrea, you won't believe, they actually know. Like, they'll go to a restaurant and the food has more salt than they normally have. Right. And they'll say, my blood pressure has definitely gone up. I know I can feel it. Like, sometimes they feel a headache. Sometimes wow. They say, I can't pinpoint, but I know this is more sodium than I normally have.
Right.
Some people have no symptoms at all. So First of all, review your food. Now, if you eat mostly at home, then the chances of you eating a lot of extra sodium is less.
Wow.
Because processed food contain a whole lot more sodium. So things like processed meat. And some of you have probably, you know, you realize that when you have or some chips or any of those things, you know, you feel that. I know I feel it. I always say this one has too much salt. Like my palate doesn't like so much salt. And It's not necessary that I'm concerned about my blood pressure. And that's why it's like that much of salt bothers me.
Right. You know your body and you know what feels good, which is great. When we really tune in, it's great. It has a lot of messages for us.
So one more thing I want to share is when you are looking at your food, what is the thing you should check in the nutrition label? And here I'm assuming that because food that you cook at home, natural food usually will not have a nutrition label. So this is a sample nutrition label and you can see it says here sodium 1060 milligram. I usually tell my patient, just ignore the daily value because you are not just eating this one thing, you know?
Yeah.
You are eating multiple things. So rather than get, you know, all thing about calculating this percentage and that percentage, calculate the total amount of sodium. So for those who are listening and you can't see what I'm showing, this is a nutrition label, like any other nutrition label on any packaged food, which shows you how much of how many calories. I don't usually talk about calories at all. Nope. But fat percentage, carbohydrate, protein, cholesterol, and here it has sodium, potassium, calcium, and iron. So these are all listed in the nutrition facts. So in the nutrition facts, in that, and sometimes nowadays I've noticed that they also add high sodium, like that is kind of like a red this thing. So check how much of sodium there is in that particular packaged food that you are planning to buy. So this is something, again, Andrea, you know, your practical suggestions, what would you suggest people do?
Well, there's a couple things. There's any one time action you could just put on your calendar, or you could say, you know what, tonight I'm going to start dinner just a little bit earlier and I'm going to take a look at some of the nutrition on whatever I'm preparing, if it's in a packaged state. Right? Take a look at the sodium. You could also, when you go to the store and grab something packaged off the shelf, so when you grab the package, just take a look at the sodium content on it so that you know. Now, what are the, you know, what do you want for sodium levels throughout the day? Like, if is this 1,000, it seems like if this 1,000 plus milligrams is 46%, you're looking at what, 2,500 milligrams?
Yeah. So
a day?
The recommendation is around 1500 milligrams a day. But again, like I said, not everyone has salt-sensitive hypertension, and there is no simple test to know. So if you are like way higher than, you know, let's say you are at 5,000, 3,000, then what is the next thing, Andrea, they should do?
Right. Well, the trickier thing is when you are stopping something.
Yeah.
Right. And that is, it's easier to design for something than to design to stop something, because there's many, many different paths for that. One of the things is you can find one food that has higher sodium that you like, and either remove it if that's possible, mm-hmm. right? If you're not a huge or limit it, right? If you have a bag of chips every day at lunch, maybe just don't grab those chips. If you really are attached to your chips, then start with something easier, right? Start with something you can eliminate or shift mm-hmm. to support you in that. And then you can always substitute if you can find a different yeah. substitute for that. But a lot of times the initial action, once you have this understanding and you choose to make a change, and I don't always suggest cold turkey unless you feel like that's a fit.
No, that doesn't work.
Maybe on Mondays you don't have chips, yeah. right? And then maybe you work up to Tuesdays, or maybe, you know, things like that. That take the low hanging fruit where it's easiest for you to do, right? If you are really attached to your chips at lunch, don't start there. Maybe you start with some packaged food that you have at home, and you start to learn how to cook that food. Right. Or you decide, I don't have that 5 days a week or 3 days a week. Maybe I only have it once a week, and you find something else. Right. So this is a little more of a tangled web that we need to untangle, but there are some easy places for you to start. And I want you to understand that you should start at the easiest place for you. Right. Yeah. It really is the most important thing. Start where it's easy and make it easy for yourself to continue to do.
Yeah. And another thing which I use quite a lot of it for, eating lower carbohydrate food, but you can use it for eating lower salt too. So, for example, if you know that today for lunch you had sausages, and if they are not sausages from your local, you know, butcher who makes them, you know, boutique and in a small batch and all
yeah.
that, very likely that sausage will have more salt. So you had sausages for lunch, then maybe you want to, you know, kind of not have the chips with your, you know, if you don't have the chips at all, that's wonderful. But as Andrea said, you know, don't try to stop everything at the same time. So maybe don't have the sausage and the chips on the same day, you know, right. just to reduce your overall sodium intake for that day.
Exactly.
So these are like small things that Andrea and I, we love sharing practical strategies, because we all know, everyone knows practically what you should do, but you will not hear us talking about a lot of shoulds.
Exactly, exactly. And there are many ways to lower your hypertension, right? And the best way is the way that you can do, right? If you can't get yourself to stop eating sausages, then don't. Start at another place where you can reduce your sodium, and then maybe the sausages come along, or maybe not, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Right. But start where you can, we call this the fast pass question. What can I get myself to do that would be effective at fill in the blank? And today it's hypertension. So what can you get yourself to do? That means you're motivated, and that means you have ability, right? And start there, because success will lead to success. So should we talk about the final step, which is potassium substitute for salt?
Okay. So this is very interesting, because most people have heard about, you know, you need to lower your sodium. You need to lower your sodium intake. It's just recently that the guidelines have started talking about increasing potassium. So potassium is also, again, one of the minerals that our body needs. And so we talked about table salt being sodium chloride. Now, potassium substituted salt, they also taste salty. But what it is out of the 100% of the sodium chloride in table salt, usually studies have shown about 70% to 100% exchanging of the sodium chloride with potassium chloride can change blood pressure, can lower blood pressure. So here there are a few caveats. Number one is, It may not be right for everyone. So someone who has kidney disease, there are certain medications that can increase your potassium levels. There are certain serious health conditions. So again, this is not medical advice. And so Andrea is going to tell you exactly what you need to do. So what is the thing that, you know, we would like, we'd encourage people to do if they are thinking of changing their salt?
Again, this is, so I always, we always want to say, Shabnam, you are a doctor, but you're not everyone's listeners who's listening to their doctor, right? So you're a doctor, but you're not their doctor. And so you are going to check with your healthcare provider of choice if a potassium substitute is right for you, right? Mm-hmm. It will know what's best and have an open conversation about whether it's good for you and why it's good for you or why it's not good for you so that you educate yourself. And that, again, is something you can just put on your calendar for your next physician's session and appointment. And if you don't have one, you can also just calendar that as well. A lot of the things we're talking to you about today, except for measuring your blood pressure regularly, are just one-time actions. You can pick a good date, a good time, put it in your calendar, and then take action. And of course, we're going to encourage you to take as much action when you're highly motivated after you're listening to this episode as you can, and get that build some success momentum.
Yeah. So one important thing here I would suggest is, because there are a bunch of medications which can raise your potassium level, so what I suggest is write down all your medications, because, you know, you may be going to three different physicians and their electronic medical records may not be talking to each other. So, you know, your physician one may not have the information with physician two, but you know what medications you are taking or you're supposed to be taking. So make a list of all those medications. And depending on, you know, sometimes you can have a conversation with your pharmacist also, may not be, because the doctor may not have time to go over each of them in detail. And meanwhile, you can, you know, have the knowledge ahead of time. Like, you can see this, these are the medications that can raise potassium levels, and am I on them? And, you know, make a note so that you have a much better conversation with your healthcare provider. So, Andrea, we talked about so many things.
Yeah, let's just do a quick wrap up, and everything will be in the show notes. So there's five things that you can do to lower your blood pressure or to treat your hypertension. First and foremost is know your target blood pressure level, right? With your medications and for who you are. And that requires you check with your healthcare provider of choice. The second is to get an accurate home device if this is what you need, right? If you don't have hypertension, then you don't need to get that. But if you do, get an accurate home device. And then number three is learn how to measure your blood pressure so that you don't get any false highs. And four is review the food in your house for sodium. And even I would extend that to review the food that you're buying for sodium before you even put it in your cart. And then number five is check with your physician or licensed healthcare provider to see if a potassium substitute is for you. So hopefully you've enjoyed this episode. You should like and share and subscribe. For this, you can see all the episodes at drkarmd.com/podcast. That's drkar, KARMD.com/podcast. And the show notes will be below for references.
Thank you. And bye now.